Svaneshamana Sharanam Babrahma Prativim Prabhu Nanurupam Yadavindad Abhutsa Vimana Iva. Translation. King Paranjit began to search for a suitable place to live, and thus he traveled all over the world. Even after a great deal of traveling, he could not find a place just to his liking. Finally, he became morose and disappointed. Please repeat. King Paranjit began to search for a suitable place to live, and thus he traveled all over the world. Even after a great deal of traveling, he could not find a place just to his liking. Finally, he became morose and disappointed. This is a 2.5-page purport to Aisha the Prabhupada, so just so you know. The travelings of King Paranjan are similar to the travelings of the modern hippies. Generally, hippies are sons of great fathers and great families. It is not that they are always poor, but some way or another they abandon the shelter of their rich fathers and travel all over the world. As stated in this verse, the living entity wants to become a Prabhu, or master. The word Prabhu means master, but actually the living entity is not a master. He is the eternal servant of God. When the living entity abandons the shelter of God, Krishna, and tries to become a Prabhu independently, he travels all over the creation. There are 8,400,000 species of life, and millions and trillions of planets within the creation. The living entity wanders throughout these various types of bodies and throughout different planets, and thus he is like King Paranjan, who traveled all over the world looking for a suitable place to live. Srinartam Das Thakur has sung, Karmakanda Gyanakanda Kevala Vishaya Bandha. The path of Karmakanda, fruit of activities, and the path of Gyanakanda, speculation, are just like strong pots of poison. Amrita Baliya Yeva Kai, Nana Yoni Sada Fire. A person who mistakes this poison to be nectar and drinks it travels in different species of life. Kadarya Bhakshana Kare. And, according to his body, he eats all types of abominable things. For instance, when the living entity is in the body of a hog, he eats stool. When the living entity is in the body of a crow, he eats all kinds of refuse, even pus and mucus, and enjoys it. Thus, Narottam Das Thakur points out that the living entity travels in different types of bodies and eats all kinds of abominable things. When he does not become ultimately happy, he becomes morose, or takes to the ways of the hippies. Thus, in the verse, it is said, Na anurupam, that the king could never find a suitable place for his purposes. This is because in any form of life, and on any planet in the material world, a living entity cannot be happy because everything in the material world is unsuitable for the spirit soul. As stated in the verse, the living entity independently wants to become a Prabhu, but as soon as he gives up this idea and becomes a servant of God, Krishna, his happiness immediately begins. Therefore, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, Miche mayar vashe yacha bhese kacha habudubai. My dear living entity, why are you being carried away by the waves of maya? As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara sarvabhutanam hideshe arjuna chishtati brahmayan sarvabhutani antarudhani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The living entity is carried in the machine of the body through so many species of life and on so many planets. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur asks the living entity why he is being carried away in these bodily machines to be placed in so many different circumstances. He advises that one surmount the waves of maya by surrendering unto Krishna. Jiva Krishnas e Vishvas Karleta Ardukanai. As soon as we confront Krishna, Krishna advises, Sarva Dharman Prityaja Mame Kam Sharanam Vraja Ham Tam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Shishyami Mahashucha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. Thus we are immediately relieved from traveling from one body to another and from one planet to another. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Brahmanda Brahmite Kon Bhagavan Jeev. If while traveling a living entity becomes fortunate enough to become blessed by the association of devotees and to come to Krishna consciousness, his real life actually begins. This Krishna conscious movement is giving all wonderful wandering living entities a chance to take to the shelter of Krishna and thus become happy. In this verse, the words Vimana Iva are very significant. In this material world, even the great king of heaven is also full of anxiety. Even if Lord Brahma is full of anxiety, What of these ordinary living entities who are working within this planet? Bhagavad Gita confirms, Ah Brahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Avartino Arjuna. From the highest planet in material down to the lowest, all the places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. In the material world, a living entity is never satisfied. Even in the position of Brahma, or in the position of Indra or Chandra, one is full of anxiety simply because he has accepted this material world as a place of happiness. Shri Prabhupada ki. Prabhupada quotes this verse here, Ah Brahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Avartino Arjuna. That's Bhagavad Gita 8:16. Wherever you go in the material world, you'll never be happy. You'll always feel a lacking, something unfilled, unsatisfied. Even sometimes you might feel satisfied in a certain position. You might feel, oh, finally I've gotten what I wanted. But that feeling lasts for a short time. It's flickering. So very shortly you become passionate to acquire other things. Generally, nobody even feels that they're satisfied. They're always thinking, well, if only I had this, then I'll be happy. Or if I had this, I'll be happy. I just need this, then I'll finally be happy. Or fill in the blank, whatever it is. But that's because that the spirit soul is not material. So if the spirit soul is looking for something material to make it happy, then that won't work. Prabhupada says, this is because in any form of life and on any planet in the material world, a living entity cannot be happy because everything in the material world is unsuitable for the spirit soul. It's just like a fish out of water. Indradinda Swami Maharaj, he uses this example in almost all of his preaching programs in Poland. And he says in a very humorous way, he says, so okay, fishy, you take a fish out of the water, right? And you bring it to the city. So okay, fishy, here's a big feast for you, a big banquet. And you have everything that you want. You got your subji, your chapatis, your pizza, your lasagna. Now enjoy it. Now will the fish be happy? No, of course he won't be. Okay, well, here you go, fishy. A packet of Marlboro cigarettes. Right? The best quality, just for you. No, he won't be happy. Okay, well, how about some Heineken's beer? You know, best quality, crisp, clean, low carbs, all good. No, okay, he won't be happy. How about a brand new automobile, sports car? Here are the keys. Go drive. No, the fish won't be happy. So what you have to do is bring the fish back to the water, and he'll be happy. It doesn't matter what you give him out of water. So the spirit soul, we're exactly like that. We're outside of the spiritual. We're outside of the spiritual energy. Whatever material things we acquire, it won't fulfill our desires. The illusory energy covers us over, so we think that actually we're satisfied for some time, but very quickly that illusion is dissipated and you have to work harder. So I wanted to share one story with everybody about this verse, Ah Brahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Avartinoja. I told this story last year in December on my father's birthday. Probably some of you can remember it, but many of you weren't here for that, so I'll just tell it again. So my father was working in Jacksonville. Jacksonville is about an hour away from Alachua, so it's like the distance from here to Brussels. And he was a taxi cab driver. And while he was driving taxi, he would distribute Bhagavad Gita sometimes to the people. So he would order Bhagavad Gitas from this one Mataji, and he would sell like that. But there was one Gita that he had that the print was upside down. So the cover was one way, and then the print was the other way, so he didn't want to sell that one. He just kept it for himself. He kept it on the dashboard so he could read it. Jacksonville is, at least it used to be, it's in the top 10 most criminal infested cities in the whole of the United States. So you can imagine it's a very dangerous place, especially in the ghettos, where ghetto means a place where, you know, very poor people, they all kind of congregate there. So one day my father got a call, and it was pretty late at night. He was working overtime, so he went to this place that happened to be in one of the worst parts of the city, but it seemed like a promising ride that he would be able to, you know, I think it was to the airport or something. So those are always good rides. So he went there, and he picks up this half white, half black man. He sits in the car, and he says, "All right, so where would you like to go, sir?" All of a sudden, the man takes out a gun, and he puts it to my dad's head, and he says, "I'm sorry, sir, but I'm going to have to take all your money in your car." So my father says, okay, actually he was very intelligent. He keeps his money in different pockets. So he just gave the money from one pocket. then he let him drive off with the car. Now, what the criminal didn't know is that every single taxi in Jacksonville has a tracking system. So he called up the company. He went to one house and he called up the company, and they knew exactly where he was. And so the police, you know, drove and tried to catch up to him. I guess eventually he figured out that there's a tracking system in the taxi, so he just abandoned the car. And he tried to destroy it in one way, but it didn't work. So when my father was picked up and he was brought to the site where the car was, the head officer came up to him and said, well, this man, I guess he figured out that we were tracking him. But he tried to destroy the car by burning one of your books in the car, and it happened to be the Bhagavad Gita. And there's only one remaining page left, so here it is. And that verse, that page happened to be A Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartina Arjuna. Mahavati Tikunteya Punarjana Nuvidyate. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, Arjuna, never returns to this material world again. So that's pretty far out. So what if we do become satisfied in life? What if we actually do attain everything? We got a good house, we have a good family, we got our, you know, enough money, and everything's taken care of, right? The ideal, the utopian idea, right, of a perfect life. If you can actually get that, it might even be possible to get that if you work hard enough or if your karma is good enough. But then what happens? Ultimately, death will take it all away from you. You'll be ripped from all your attachments mercilessly, and you won't be able to take anything with you. Death comes to you, and you can't do anything about it. You can't say, "Oh, please, just give me a few more years. I just have to finish, you know, this project, that project." No, sorry, buddy, you got to go now. It's just like once there was a great sculptor. And this sculptor, he was such a great, he made such great statues that it looked lifelike. You couldn't tell the difference between the person and the statue itself. I've experienced this. Anybody heard of Ripley's Believe It or Not? It's a famous TV show in America. Anyways, so I went to the museum in Orlando, or Miami, can't remember, Orlando I think it was. And there's statues there. it's a funny museum. You go up the stairs and then you turn around the corner and you see one man taking a picture of a lady, right? You walk through the door and there's a man taking a picture of a lady, and you stop for a second and you wait until he takes the picture. Then you realize, wait a second, they're just statues. Because they're such good statues, you can't tell the difference between them. So this sculptor, he was so good that whatever sculpture he would make, you couldn't tell the difference between him, the statue, and the person himself. So he happened to be very afraid of death. He did not want to die. He was very happy in his life. So he knew that the time of death was coming. So what he did is he created nine identical statues with himself, right? And they looked so exact, nobody could tell a difference. So he stood somewhere in between all nine statues, and death came to him. And death was looking, and he was thinking, wow, these statues, they're so good. I can't tell the difference. He was perplexed. He didn't know what to do. But then he had an idea. He said, wow, whoever made these statues is a terrible sculptor. And so immediately the man became angry. He said, how dare you? My sculptures are so good I even tricked you. Death said, okay, come, sir. So you can't trick death. Death is ultimate. And if you don't surrender to, like they say, if you don't surrender to Krishna willingly, you'll have to surrender to him forcefully in the time of death. Death is the final test of life. Right. We have so many tests in life. We learn so many things just from situations or from school or from other people. We learn so many things in life, but the real test is death. Death is, it's the end of the body, and it decides where our next destination is, what our future is. So in school systems, the form of assessment is what pushes all the other study habits during the year, the curriculum, right? The final test is what determines what you're going to study during the year. So death should determine what we do during our life, right? What is our goal after death? What do we want to do? Where do we want to go? Who are? I mean, The problem is in material civilization, nobody even knows who they are, where they're going. They don't know anything about reincarnation. They think the body is just going to be, when the body is destroyed, then everything is gone. But of course, we know contrary to that. So what do we want to do? The Vedic scriptures say that it doesn't matter what your goal is in life, but death should be in the forefront of your mind. It should be in the forefront of your activities. You should know where you want to go, right? Whether you're a materialist, if you want to go to the heavens, or if you're a jnani, you want to go to the world of perfected beings, or if you're a devotee, you want to go to Vaikuntha Lok. But death is an ultimate is our consideration in life. We should be considering that and work according to that. But we find in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says, "Antakale chamameva smaran vukta kalevram ya prayati samadbhavam nati yati nasyacha samshaya." 8th chapter, 5th verse. It says, anybody who remembers me at the time of death, that person immediately attains my nature, Arjuna. So if you simply remember Krishna at the time of death, then what's the problem? Why are we so concerned all throughout our life about death? It's just a short amount of time, death, right? Yam yam vapi smanam bhavam taj jantyante kalevram tam tamivaite konte asadandu tad bhava bhavita. That's the next verse. So any state of being which you remember it at the time of death, that you'll attain without fail, Arjuna. So if you remember Krishna at the time of death, what's the problem, right? Why should we try so hard during our whole life, you know, repressing our material desires and, you know, working so hard in devotional service, waking up early in the morning? Why try so hard? Just enjoy life. And then at the time of death, okay, well, we'll go back, you know, just remember Krishna and go back to Godhead, right? But, of course, there's so many problems with this philosophy, this way of thinking. But what is it that Krishna says? What does Krishna recommend? Right? Does anybody know what the next verse is, the immediate verse after this Yam Yam Vapi Svanabhava? It's 8th chapter, 7th verse. It says, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanu smarayudyacha mayarpita manobudhir mami vaishyasi samshaya. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanu smara. Means, tasmat sarveshu kaleshu. Therefore, you should remember me all the time, right? He doesn't say just, okay, well, death is the deciding factor, so just wait until death. And then, no, he says, all the time you should remember me. Mayarpita manobudhir mami vaishyasi samshaya. And engage all of your mind and your intelligence and all your activities to me. And then yudyacha, mayapita, mamanusmada yudyacha. Yudya means fighting. So do your duty, you know, specific for Arjuna, he says fight. So do your duties and always remember Krishna. Right? That's what Krishna recommends. Not that just do whatever you want during your lifetime and then time of death, that's okay. You'll go back to Godhead if you remember Krishna. No, it's not like the teacher or your professor is going to tell you, okay, the final exam, the dissertation, that's what actually matters in college. That's what matters in high school. So don't worry about the rest of the school year. Just, you know, go out and play sports, you know, hang out with your friends. Don't worry about anything. Just wait till the last test and then, you know, that'll decide it. No, the teacher will never tell you that. You have to study all year just to pass that test. So our life is like that. Our life is like a big test. And death is the ultimate test. It's the final test. And everything that we do during our life will affect us at death. Krishna tvadiya padapanka japanjarantam adyaiva me vishatumana saraja hamsa prana prayana samaye kafavata pite kanta virodhana vidho smaranam kutaste. This is one of the verses of King Kulashekar. We learned this in our Vaishnavacharya's course. So, O Krishna, please let my mind enter the tangled stems of your two lotus feet. How will I be able to remember you at the time of death when my throat will be choked up with mucus, bile, and air? Right, so King Kulashekar is praying, just let me go back to Godhead now, let me die now. Because at the time of death, it will be so difficult, so much suffering. Right? So those who think that at the time of death, I'll just wait a little while until I become Krishna conscious, right? I'm young. I got, you know, my senses are strong and, you know, uncontrollable desire anyways, what can I do? you know, it's the 21st century, let me, you know, do what I want to do, right? So people who think like that, it'll be very difficult for them to take up devotional service, what to speak of remembering Krishna at the time of death. Bhaktivedanta Swami said one time, said those devotees who think that, I probably won't make it back to Godhead in this lifetime, right? It might take a few lifetimes, and anyways, you know, let me just go about my activities. So those persons, they probably won't go back to Godhead in this lifetime. But the persons who are always striving, who think, yes, in this lifetime I'll go back to Godhead if Krishna's merciful to me. I'm not qualified, but I want to go back to Godhead in this lifetime. They can go back to Godhead because of their endeavors. Right? So if we're serious about, if we want to be devotees, we should start now. Start this very day. Not wait any longer. Procrastination's in the mode of ignorance. Right? There's no reason to procrastinate in any activities, but spiritual life is of the utmost importance. Right? Spiritual life is just like yesterday, there was one high school student who came here, and she came up, she wanted to do an interview with somebody. Me and Hari Priya just happened to be around, so we went into the room and they were interviewing us. And he said, so what have you learned in this Krishna consciousness? What have you learned from this lifestyle? And we both said, well, it's a way of living, right? It's a way how you can connect everything to God. Everything becomes spiritual instead of mundane. So that should be our life. In the preface of every single volume of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada quotes one verse so we can understand that's a pretty important verse, right? If Prabhupada would put it in the preface. Komaram acha pragyo dharman bhagavataniha. What's that? Durlabhu manusham janma tadapi aduvam artadam. Can't find it here. Oh, there it is. Don't have the translation here, but Kumara. So we know these three ages of Krishna, right? Bala, Kumara, and Kishore. Right? So Bala is when Krishna's a baby. Shishiradha Gopinath Ki Jai. Bala is the baby form of Krishna. Komara is when he's from 6 to 10 years old, 6 to 11. And then Kishore goes up to the age of 16. So this is a verse from Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto. He says, Komara acharet pragyo. Komara. Komara means 5 years old. From the age of 5, dharman bhagavataniya. You should start practicing devotional service. You should start practicing Bhagavad Dharma, Sanatan Dharma. Durlabha manushan janma, this human birth is so rare. Tadapi yaduvam artadam. It's so rare, but we can attain the most significant goal in this human life. Right? In a short period of time, we can attain the greatest goal. So that's Prahlad Maharaj's view. You have any questions or comments? Something? Anything? Mother Kanchanavali, you're thinking? I heard you thinking. Mentioning the fish analogy? Does it ring a bell? Nothing? Yes, Mother? So how to keep the enthusiasm to progress? How to keep... So the question is, how do we keep this enthusiasm to practice devotional service in a progressive way? That's an interesting question. Yeah, I guess we can practice devotional service in a non-progressive way where we just kind of do things without thinking about it. How to keep that enthusiasm? Well, there's many. Of course, associating with those who are actually enthusiastic, that's a focal point. You associate with devotees who actually want to become pure devotees, who are actually striving for that. Not there's so many different types of devotees, right? And we respect them all. But the Sakama devotees, those who are with material desires and who don't want to clean the dust from the mirror of the heart, we should limit our association with such devotees, even though they chant Hare Krishna, because that association will rub off on us, and we won't, that the enthusiasm will drain, right? So to associate with those persons who is actually serious about becoming pure devotees, that will keep the fire of devotional service burning. Any thoughts on that or other questions? Yes, Prabhu.
So on one side, those who are less advanced, they should seek association with
That's the nectar of instruction. Any of our Bhakti Shastri students know that verse? Should how a Vaishnava associates? Right. Right. Yeah, equal level. Right. So that. Formal. Right. All right. So devotees who are actually serious about, even though they're less advanced, if they're actually serious about performing devotional service, then the senior devotee associates with that person and he gives him mercy by, you know, instruction, good example. But if somebody is less advanced and also they don't want to necessarily become more advanced, then, you know, you can't really give good instruction because they won't take it. And what's the point of associating? You can always be friendly, you can be kind and, you know, oh, how are you doing? But intimate association really means dadati pratigunati, right? Giving in charity, accepting charity, giving prasad, like that, loving relationships. Right. Jaini Tiger?
For Madhya Manikari, there are two more types of association. Madhya Manikari also preaches to these and ignores and doesn't associate at all with the envious offenders. Just to add to this point.
Right, so we have to be very intelligent.
In regard to non-devotees, he does preach to non-devotees, but to the envious non-devotees.
Right, so we have to be intelligent how to associate with people. This is actually one of the main points of a devotee's life, how to associate, how to distinguish between other persons. Some people hold the idea that we're all Vaishnavas. Of course, it has validity, but we're all Vaishnavas, and everybody's a devotee of Krishna, so, you know, you can't distinguish between anybody, and, you know, don't call them karmis, that's not nice, right? I heard one Mataji one time, I cringe whenever I hear the devotees call them karmis, because, oh, it's just so mean. No, but Prabhupada was so heavy. Prabhupada was just unbelievably heavy. Maybe we won't come up to that level of Prabhupada's gravity, but still, we should speak the truth, right? The spirit soul is ultimately a servant of God, but it's a reality that the spirit soul is envious of God. That is the truth. We are all here because we have become envious of Krishna. Hate. Icha doisha samuttena danda mohena bharata. All living entities are born into desire and hate, Krishna says. It's always there with the living entity. And this is the root cause of all of our problems in material life. Right? We're in material life because of hate of Krishna. We can get out of material life because for loving Krishna, just to switch that around. But it's a reality that actually enviousness of God is there. So that's why distinction is there. We're servants of God, but still we've made a big mistake. Right? Yes, Ma?
So we can, association doesn't mean just in the sense
Yeah. Same time, everybody's always preaching, right? We can't not preach or be preached too. It's always going to be like that. You're preaching, first of all, by your external activities, right? Unconsciously, you do something, you're saying, well, this is correct. Or maybe you know it's not correct, but still you have to do it because maybe a subtle conviction is there that you want to do this. So our subtle body forms our gross body, right? The subtle turns into gross. So when you're whoever you're speaking with, there's always going to be an exchange of ideas, right? Either he's preaching or you're preaching. There's always going to be preaching. So, but in Vaishnava relationships, we exchange conclusions of the shastra, right? So we all get the same idea. But say for a Christian devotee, one will be preaching to the other. It's always like that. You can't avoid it. If you don't want to preach to him, he'll preach to you. That's just what's going to happen. So we should always be diligent in our preaching tactics. Back to Freddie. Mm-hmm. Right. Like in a car crash or heart attack, something like that. Well, Srila Prabhupada said that if you cannot remember Krishna at the time of death, then Krishna will remember you, right, because of a full life of devotional service. Ramanujacharya, he was revealed 6 truths by his spiritual master, Mahapurna. Actually, the deity of that area was named Bharadaraj. Bharadaraj was the deity of that area. And he spoke to Mahapurna. He revealed this within his heart. And Mahapurna spoke this truth, the Ramanujacharya. There are 6 truths. And one of them happened to be that it is not compulsory. Again, it's not compulsory to remember the Lord at the time of death. Right? Interesting, right? We don't hear that all the time. But he said it's not compulsory. It means during your life, you're always performing devotional service. Say you don't remember. Do you think the Lord will forget everything that you've done? If the Lord takes everything, it says that he takes all of our devotional service, even though it might be like a seed, he takes it to be a great mountain. And all offenses that we perform, even though it might be like a mountain, he takes it as a small seed. Right? So if the Lord has that as a quality, then why would he forget everything we've done during our life? Right? There's a verse in Isha Upanishad, Vayor aninam amritam atedam basmatam suryaram om krito smara kritam smara krito smara kritam smara. The devotee's praying, oh my Lord, let this body be merged with the totality of air and so on. But please, at the end of my life, remember what all that I've done for you. Right? All the devotional service I performed for you. So this is a valid prayer. Even though we might forget Krishna at the time of death, whatever the circumstances may be. Oh yeah, one point I wanted to mention is that so the curriculum, you can teach any curriculum you want during the school year, but if people are failing the test, then I think you might have to revise that curriculum, right? So the materialists are preaching a way of life, right? And death is the test of how we live during life. And when people are dying, they're in unbelievable suffering, anxiety, attachment. They can't, it's just everybody's in total fear. Like I heard one devotee, a man had a heart attack on the train, and he just keeled over, and he was on the ground shaking. And his last words were, please, give me a cigarette, give me a cigarette. So somebody lit a cigarette, put it in his mouth. He said, tell my girlfriend I love her. And that's how he died, like that. So what type of way to die is that? You know, it's just dying like an animal. Are we meant to die like animals? No, of course not. So devotees, we see in this kind of movement, devotees are dying, and an amazing way. Devotees die with kirtan going around them. I mean, even if nothing existed after death, even if spiritual life was a complete hoax and nothing was true, still, I wouldn't want to live any other way. It's such a happy lifestyle. Completely free from, there's so many things in material life that are just, people commit suicide every day. What's the suicide rate in this world every year? Thousands and thousands. Murders and rapes and genocides, right? I mean, this is a miserable place. So devotional service, it might be difficult, but material life is impossible. Right? So what can we do? It's the happiest thing. It's the best you're going to get. But devotees, yes, they're dying and they're crying in ecstatic love of God. They're hearing the kirtan. All their friends and all their loved ones are there with them. And of course, something does exist, right? Spirit, there is an objective truth which exists. And that objective truth, well, because of devotional service, we'll attain at least something better than what we have now, right? Krishna will take care of us. We'll go somewhere. Somewhere better to continue our devotional service. Last comment.
It was just on this point you made about comments. I think that makes me nervous as well when people do that, but I think it's not the definition, because karma is actually to call a materialist these days, karma is actually a compliment. Karma means at least on a technical point of view, karma is someone who follows the scriptures together. So they worship God. Actually, because the people might be karma.
Right.
But I think what kind of what makes me wince when people say that is because it's the way it's said, and it's like these dirty, disgusting people. And when I think, I used to do it, when I first met and stuff. But then I thought about it, it's actually I'm not that different. And that's where I came from. This dirty, disgusting, nasty little karma to me. And because somebody was nice to me, or somebody was nice to me, I became devoted.
Yeah, of course, it's the mentality of you're despising a person. Yeah, that's not encouraged. But that's a funny point. They're not karmis, they're vikarmis, right? So probably the better term to use would be like dvipad pashu, right? They're just two-legged animals, right? Right. No more karmis, they're two-legged animals. But yes, we don't say it in a despising the person. We should see all living entities equally, right? Vidya vinaya sampanne brahma gavani hastini shuni chaiva sapake cha pandita savanarshina. Of course, we heard one pastime in the Prabhupada DVD that Mother Vishakha was showing. We probably gave one lecture in New York, I think it was, or someplace in the States. And this whole lecture was a public lecture. It was one's devotee's parents came. And he was talking about hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, the whole class. Right? It's materialistic civilization, it's all it's about. So after the program, the devotee's mother comes to her and she says, "Why is he just talking about hogs, dogs, camels, and asses? What was that all about?" But this is what we need to hear at this time. The pure devotee knows exactly what we need, even though we might be a little bewildered. That's the beauty of it all. Thank you all very much for listening. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.